Chapter 66. As yet? Apostrophe apostrophe repeated Florence. Not a bit, apostrophe returned the captain, kissing his iron hand. And before I begin to be my heart's delight, Waller will have wrote home from the island, or from some port or another, and made all taut and ships a happy end with regard to old Sol Gills. Here the captain became solemn, who I'll stand by, and not desert until death do us part, and when the stormy winds do blow over all the catechism, apostrophe said the captain parenthetically, and there you'll find them expressions, if it would console Sol Gills, to have the opinion of a seafaring man as has got a mind equal to any undertaking, that he puts it alongside of. And as was all but smashed in his apprenticeship, and of which the name is Bunsby, that ere man shall give him such an opinion in his own parlor as'll stun him. Ah! Apostrophe said Captain Cuttle, vauntingly, as much as if he'd gone, and knocked his head again the door. Apostrophe apostrophe, let us take this tilde gentleman to see him, and let us hear what he says, apostrophe cried Florence. Will you go with us now? We have a coach here. Apostrophe, again the captain clapped his hand to his head, on which the hard glazed hat was not, and looked discomfited. But at this instant a most remarkable phenomenon occurred. The door opening, without any note of preparation, and apparently of itself, the hard glazed hat in question skimmed into the room like a bird, and alighted heavily at the captain's feet. The door then shut as violently as it had opened, and nothing ensued in explanation of the prodigy. Captain Cuttle picked up his hat, and having turned it over with a look of interest and welcome, began to polish it on his sleeve while doing so. The captain eyed his visitors intently, and said in a low voice, "You see, I should have bore down on Sol Gills yesterday, and this morning, but she took it away and kept it. That's the long and short of subject." Apostrophe, who did, for goodness sake? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Susan Nipper. The lady of the house, my dear, returned the captain, in a gruff whisper, and making signals of secrecy. We had some words about the swabbing of these here planks, and she in short, apostrophe, said the captain, eyeing the door, and relieving himself with a long breath, she stopped my liberty. Apostrophe, oh! I wish she had me to deal with. Apostrophe said Susan, reddening with the energy of the wish. I'd stop her. Apostrophe, would you, do you, my dear? Apostrophe apostrophe rejoined the captain, shaking his head doubtfully, but regarding the desperate courage of the fair aspirant with obvious admiration. I don't know. It's difficult navigation. She's very hard to carry on with, my dear. You never can tell how she'll head, you see. She's full one minute, and round upon you next. And when she in a tartar, apostrophe said the captain, with the perspiration breaking out upon his forehead. There was nothing but a whistle emphatic enough for the conclusion of the sentence, so the captain whistled tremulously. After which he again shook his head, and recurring to his admiration of Miss Nipper's devoted bravery, timidly repeated, would you, do you think, my dear? Apostrophe apostrophe, Susan only replied with a bridling smile, but that was so very full of defiance, that there is no knowing how long Captain Cuttle might have stood entranced in its contemplation, if Florence in her anxiety had not again proposed their immediately resorting to the oracular Bunsby. Thus reminded of his duty, Captain Cuttle put on the glazed hat firmly, took up another knobby stick, with which he had supplied the place of that one given to Walter, and offering his arm to Florence, prepared to cut his way through the enemy. It turned out, however, that Mrs. McStinger had already changed her course, and that she headed, as the captain had remarked she often did, in quite a new direction. For when they got downstairs, they found that exemplary woman beating the mats on the doorsteps, with Alexander, still upon the paving stone, dimly looming through a fog of dust, and so absorbed was Mrs. McStinger in her household occupation, that when Captain Cuttle and his visitors passed, she beat the harder, and neither by word nor gesture showed any consciousness of their vicinity. The captain was so well pleased with this easy escape, although the effect of the doormats on him was like a copious administration of snuff, and made him sneeze until the tears ran down his face, that he could hardly believe his good fortune. But more than once, between the door and the hackney coach, looked over his shoulder, with an obvious apprehension of Mrs. McStinger's giving chase yet. However, they got to the corner of Brig Plus without any molestation from that terrible fire ship, and the captain mounting the coach box for his gallantry would not allow him to ride inside with the ladies, though besought to do so piloted the driver on his course for Captain Bunsby's vessel, which was called the Cautious Clara, and was lying hard by Ratcliffe. Arrived at the wharf off which this great commander's ship was jammed in among some 500 companions, whose tangled rigging looked like monstrous cobwebs half swept down, Captain Cuttle appeared at the coach window, and invited Florence and Miss Nipper to accompany him on board. Observing that Bunsby was to the last degree soft-hearted in respect of ladies, and that nothing would so much tend to bring his expansive intellect into a state of harmony as their presentation to the Cautious Clara, Florence readily consented, and the captain, taking her little hand in his prodigious palm, led her, with a mixed expression of patronage, paternity, pride, and ceremony, that was pleasant to see, over several very dirty decks, until, coming to the Clara, they found that cautious craft which lay outside the tier, with her gangway removed, and half a dozen feet of river interposed between herself and her nearest neighbor. It appeared, from Captain Cuttle's explanation, that the great Bunsby, like himself, was cruelly treated by his landlady, and that when her usage of him for the time being was so hard, that he could bear it no longer, he set this gulf between them as a last resource. Clara ahoy! Apostrophe apostrophe cried the captain, putting a hand to each side of his mouth. Ahoy! Apostrophe apostrophe cried a boy, like the captain's echo, tumbling up from below. Bunsby aboard? Apostrophe apostrophe cried the captain, hailing the boy in a stentorian voice, as if he were half a mile off instead of 2 yards. Eh, eh! Apostrophe apostrophe cried the boy, in the same tone. The boy then shoved out a plank to Captain Cuttle, who adjusted it carefully, and led Florence across, returning presently for Miss Nipper. So they stood upon the deck of the Cautious Clara, in whose standing rigging, divers fluttering articles of dress were curing, in company with a few tongues and some mackerel. Immediately there appeared, coming slowly up above the bulkhead of the cabin, another bulkhead human, and very large with one stationary eye in the mahogany face, and one revolving one, on the principle of some lighthouses. This head was decorated with shaggy hair, like oakum, apostrophe which had no governing inclination towards the north, east, west, or south, but inclined to all four quarters of the compass, and to every point upon it. The head was followed by a perfect desert of chin, and by a shirt collar and neckerchief, and by a dreadnought pilot coat, and by a pair of dreadnought pilot trousers, whereof the waistband was so very broad and high, that it became a succedaneum for a waistcoat, being ornamented near the wearer's breastbone with some massive wooden buttons, like backgammon men. As the lower portions of these pantaloons became revealed, Bunsby stood confessed, his hands in their pockets, which were of vast size, and his gaze directed, not to Captain Cuttle or the ladies, but the masthead. The profound appearance of this philosopher, who was bulky and strong, and on whose extremely red face an expression of taciturnity sat enthroned, not inconsistent with his character, in which that quality was proudly conspicuous, almost daunted Captain Cuttle, though on familiar terms with him, whispering to Florence that Bunsby had never in his life expressed surprise, and was considered not to know what it meant. The captain watched him as he eyed his masthead, and afterwards swept the horizon, and when the revolving eye seemed to be coming round in his direction, said, Bunsby, my lad, how fares it? Apostrophe apostrophe, a deep, gruff, husky utterance, which seemed to have no connection with Bunsby, and certainly had not the least effect upon his face, replied, Shipmet, how goes it? Apostrophe apostrophe, at the same time Bunsby's right hand and arm, emerging from a pocket, shook the captain's, and went back again. Bunsby, apostrophe, said the captain, striking home at once, here you are, a man of mind, and a man as can give an opinion. Here's a young lady as wants to take that opinion, in regard of my friend Waller, likewise my t'other friend, Sol Gills, which is a character for you to come within hail of, being a man of science, which is the mother of invention, and knows no law. Bunsby, will you wear, to oblige me, and come along with us? Apostrophe apostrophe, the great commander, who seemed by expression of his visage, to be always on the lookout for something in the extremest distance, and to have no ocular knowledge of any end within 10 miles, made no reply whatever. Here is a man, apostrophe, said the captain, addressing himself to his fair auditors, and indicating the commander with his outstretched hook, that has fell down, more than any man alive, that has had more accidents happen to his own self than the seaman's hospital to all hands, that took as many spars and bars and bolts about the outside of his head when he was young, as you'd want a order for on Chatham Yard, to build a pleasure yacht with, and yet that his opinion's in that way, it's my belief, for there ain't nothing like him afloater ashore. Apostrophe, the stolid commander appeared by a very slight vibration in his elbows, to express some satisfaction in this encomium. But if his face had been as distant as his gaze was, it could hardly have enlightened the beholders less in reference to anything that was passing in his thoughts. Shipmate, apostrophe, said Bunsby, all of a sudden, and stooping down to look out under some interposing spar, what'll the ladies drink? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Captain Cuttle, whose delicacy was shocked by such an inquiry in connection with Florence, drew the sage aside, and seeming to explain in his ear, accompanied him below, where, that he might not take offense, the captain drank a dram himself with Florence and Susan, glancing down the open skylight, saw the sage, with difficulty finding room for himself between his berth, and a very little brass fireplace, serve out for self and friend. They soon reappeared on deck, and Captain Cuttle, triumphing in the success of his enterprise, conducted Florence back to the coach, while Bunsby followed, escorting Miss Nipper, whom he hugged upon the way, much to that young lady's indignation, with his pilot-coated arm, like a blue bear. The captain put his oracle inside, and gloried so much in having secured him, and having got that mind into a hackney coach, that he could not refrain from often peeping in at Florence through the little window behind the driver, and testifying his delight in smiles, and also in taps upon his forehead, to hint to her that the brain of Bunsby was hard at it in the meantime. Bunsby, still hugging Miss Nipper for his friend, the captain, had not exaggerated the softness of his heart, uniformly preserved his gravity of deportment, and showed no other consciousness of her or anything. Uncle Sol, who had come home, received them at the door, and ushered them immediately into the little back parlor, strangely altered by the absence of Walter. On the table, and about the room, were the charts and maps on which the heavy-hearted instrument maker had again and again tracked the missing vessel across the sea, and on which, with a pair of compasses, that he still had in his hand, he had been measuring, a minute before, how far she must have driven, to have driven here or there, and trying to demonstrate, that a long time must elapse before hope was exhausted. Whether she can have run, apostrophe, said Uncle Sol, looking wistfully over the chart. But no, that's almost impossible, or whether she can have been forced by stress of weather, but that's not reasonably likely. Or whether there is any hope she so far changed her course as, but even I can hardly hope that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with such broken suggestions, Poor old Uncle Sol roamed over the great sheet before him, and could not find a speck of hopeful probability in it large enough to set one small point of the compasses upon. Florence saw immediately it would have been difficult to help seeing that there was a singular indescribable change in the old man, and that while his manner was far more restless and unsettled than usual, there was yet a curious, contradictory decision in it that perplexed her very much. She fancied once that he spoke wildly and at random, for on her saying she regretted not to have seen him when she had been there before that morning, he at first replied that he had been to see her, and directly afterwards seemed to wish to recall that answer. "You have been to see me?" said Florence. "Today?" "Yes, my dear young lady," returned Uncle Sol, looking at her and away from her in a confused manner. "I wished to see you with my own eyes, and to hear you with my own ears, once more before," there he stopped. "Before when? Before what?" said Florence, putting her hand upon his arm. "Did I say before?" replied Old Sol. "If I did, I must have meant before we should have news of my dear boy." "You are not well," said Florence, tenderly. "You have been so very anxious, I am sure you are not well." "I am as well," returned the old man, shutting up his right hand and holding it out to show her. "As well and firm as any man at my time of life can hope to be. See, it's steady. Is its master not as capable of resolution and fortitude as many a younger man?" "I think so. We shall see." There was that in his manner more than in his words, though they remained with her too, which impressed Florence so much that she would have confided her uneasiness to Captain Cuttle at that moment if the captain had not seized that moment for expounding the state of circumstance on which the opinion of the sagacious Bunsby was requested, and entreating that profound authority to deliver the same. Bunsby, whose eye continued to be addressed to somewhere about the halfway house between London and Gravesend, two or three times put out his rough right arm, as seeking to wind it for inspiration round the fair form of Miss Nipper, but that young female having withdrawn herself, in displeasure, to the opposite side of the table, the soft heart of the commander of the cautious Clara met with no response to its impulses. After sundry failures in this wise, the commander, addressing himself to nobody, thus spake, or rather the voice within him said of its own accord, and quite independent of himself, as if he were possessed by a gruff spirit. "My name's Jack Bunsby." "He was christened John," cried the delighted Captain Cuttle. "Hear him." "And what I says," pursued the voice, after some deliberation, "I stands to." The captain, with Florence on his arm, nodded at the auditory, and seemed to say, "Now he's coming out. This is what I meant when I brought him." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.